Hello, this is Donna, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the weekend edition of the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Now, typically, I start with the crime files every morning, but this weekend, I wanted to start with some happy news. An eighth grader overcame nerves to win the National Spelling Bee. Shrey Parikh, an eighth grader, felt his body shake from nerves and doubts every time he walked to the microphone at the Scripps National Spelling Bee, the final test of a six-year competitive spelling career marked by triumph and heartbreak that he knew he could end at any moment. Story by Ben Nichols. Then he listened to producer Jock Bailey, and his dour body language vanished as he nodded vigorously, his tell that, yes, he knew the words he was asked to spell, all of them. Once I get the word, Shrey said, I'm not really nervous anymore because then it's all in my control. Shrey arrived as a favorite and walked away as the National Spelling Bee champion Thursday night, outlasting a deep and experienced group of finalists and beating Ishan Gupta in a lightning round tiebreaker that looked like it was over as soon as Shrey raced through his first word. His final tally? 32 words spelled correctly in 90 seconds, a record for the shootout-style finish that was first used in 2022. So starting the day with some good news. This weekend marks a second blue moon in this year. A blue moon is the one that arrives twice in one calendar month. Get set for a rare blue moon micromoon this weekend, a blue moon that's also the most distant and smallest-looking full moon of this year. A bonus, a brilliant star Antares will photobomb Sunday's spectacle for a celestial 3-for-1. A blue moon occurs every 2 to 3 years when a second full moon squeezes into a single month. May 1st saw this month's first full moon. Since the moon's orbit isn't a perfect circle, the upcoming full moon will be farther from the Earth than usual at a distance of about 252,360 miles, making it seem a bit smaller and dimmer. It's the opposite of a supermoon when a full moon comes closer to us than normal. The most recent supermoon, for instance, was just 225,130 miles away. The virtual telescope project Glenut Massi, which will provide a live webcast from Italy, said Sunday's micromoon will appear about 6% smaller and 10% dimmer than the average full moon, differences that are subtle enough to likely go unnoticed by most observers. The scene will be especially thrilling south of the equator across the Pacific. For stargazers in Argentina, Chile, New Zealand, Eastern Australia, parts of Antarctica, and a smattering of other islands, Antares will vanish temporarily as the blue micromoon passes in front of it. The red supergiant star, 550 light years away, is also known as the heart of Scorpion in the constellation of Scorpius. A light year is almost 6 trillion miles, in case you were wondering. There won't be any disappearing act for those looking elsewhere in the world, with Antares constantly visible alongside the full moon. And despite the name, the blue moon won't appear turquoise, sapphire, or any other shade. The term simply refers to the uncommon occurrence of two full moons in one calendar month. In other news from space, three astronauts from China will return to Earth after 210 days in space. Three Chinese astronauts returned to Earth on Friday after 210 days in space, setting a record for the longest on-orbit stay by a Chinese crew. The craft carrying the astronauts touched down at Dongfeng landing site in North China's Inner Mongolia region earlier in that evening. Their return came as China prepares for its first lunar landing by 2030. The crew had completed various tasks from processing and transmitting experimental data to transferring remaining supplies, the official news agency quoted as saying. They also shared their experience with the 23 crew who had arrived at the space station on Monday. The space agency spokesperson said they were also on earlier missions to the space station and that one of them had completed 7 spacewalks in total. Zhang Lu said he felt extremely emotional when he returned to China. He said at the astronauts' mission, it wouldn't have been possible without the care and support from their families and comrades, as well as the backing of leaders and those involved in the project. Looking at Earth from space, I really felt that humanity is an indivisible community with a shared future, he said. One of the three astronauts who arrived at the space station is set to stay for a year. As China steps up its space program, its astronauts have carried out multiple missions in the space station, developed after China was effectively excluded from the International Space Station on U.S. concerns over national security. The U.S. is seen as China's top space rival, with the NASA competing to land astronauts on the moon's surface in 2028. A little closer to home, let's take a look at business news from Rick Moriarty. Hidden Level's antennas scan the skies for drones flying where they shouldn't. Hidden Level is taking its drone detection game to a whole new level. The Syracuse company opened a $3 million high-tech chamber that enables it to quickly test how well its antennas detect the radio frequencies used by drones. The testing facility on Kinney Road in DeWitt is directly across the street from a manufacturing center Hidden Level opened in 2024. Products made at the manufacturing center can now be taken across the street to be tested and calibrated in an anechoic chamber before shipped to customers. Hidden Level makes antennas that can scan the skies for drones that are flying where they shouldn't be, such as airport flight paths, sports stadiums, sensitive government installations, and military facilities. When they detect one, law enforcement, military personnel, and civilian authorities with a need to know are instantly alerted to the drone's presence, as well as the location of the person operating it. With drones playing a huge role in modern warfare, demand for Hidden Level's technology is growing, especially among the U.S. military. Drones are hard to detect with radar because they are small and they fly low. Radar also has a disadvantage because the signal it gives off reveals the radar's location to potential adversaries. Hidden Level's antennas give off no signals. Instead, they listen for the radio signals a drone uses to communicate with its operator. The system is completely passive, so an adversary would find it almost impossible to detect the location of the antennas. The anechoic chamber at the company's new testing site is a 26 by 32 foot room where engineers test the newly built antennas. The 26 foot high room is lined with cone-shaped foam that absorbs radio waves, recreating what's called an echo-free chamber. It's an RF silent space that allows us to test our technology without any environmental disruption, said the VP of operations. It also keeps any stray RF energy out, and that allows us to isolate the sensor that is under test. Until now, the company evaluated its antennas in the old-fashioned way. It placed them outdoors behind the company's headquarters near the Syracuse Inner Harbor. Then it flew a drone around the vicinity to determine how good a job the antennas did at detecting it. But outdoor testing has disadvantages. Among them, third-party drones flying around can emit radio frequencies that interfere with the company's test. And another is weather. With rain and snow, you have all kinds of ambient noise, so your level of calibration precision is a night and day difference, said company founder. Another problem is at the time it takes to test the company's products outdoors. It takes a full day to test six sensors and then a week required to interpret all the data. With the chamber, the company can test a single sensor in 4 to 5 hours with the results instantly analyzed. Hidden Level started with a few employees in 2018 and has grown steadily with 140 employees today. The company produces about 100 antennas per year. With the new testing facility, it could potentially test 1,000 of them in a year. So now we have controlled tests in controlled environments, and it's very repeatable. This could operate 24/7 if we needed to. The chamber did not come cheap. It cost $3.1 million, including raising the roof of the building where it's housed by 26 feet. Empire State Development, the state's economic development office, provided a $1 million capital grant to the company to assist with those costs. Also from Rick Moriarty, stormwater dispute holds up Clay Delta Sonic. 3 years after Delta Sonic got permission from the town of Clay to build a large car wash, convenience store, and gas station on Route 31, not one shovel of dirt has turned on what would be the company's fourth location in Onondaga County. What's stalling the project? A dispute over water, and not the water Delta Sonic would use in its car wash. The dispute over stormwater that flows into the company's property at 3805 and 3809 Route 31 from a neighboring shopping plaza. Buffalo-based Delta Sonic Car Wash Systems, Inc. filed a lawsuit in February of 2025 against Core Development Company, the owner of the shopping plaza. The lawsuit in State Supreme Court in Onondaga County alleges that Core is intentionally sending stormwater from the shopping plaza onto Delta Sonic's property, making the land too wet to build on. Rainwater flowing from Kohl's department store section of the plaza runs into a series of stormwater retention ponds between the Kohl's parking lot and Delta Sonic's property. According to Delta Sonic, when water overflows those retention ponds, it runs right onto its property. The company is seeking a court order requiring Kohl to stop sending water onto its property. The lawsuit also seeks damages of at least $5 million from Kohl. Kohl has denied allegations and is seeking dismissal of the lawsuit. In court papers, it said it was designed and built the center's drainage system and stormwater basins in accordance with all applicable statutes and codes. In addition, the company said any damage to Delta Sonic's property is the result of pre-existing conditions. Representatives of both companies did not respond to requests for comment. The Delta Sonic planned at the site would be the largest one in the county and one of the largest amongst the company's 33 car washes in New York, Illinois, and Pennsylvania. The state's automatic car wash would include indoor self-servicing, vacuuming, and the option of auto detailing provided by the employees. Unlike most other Delta Sonics, which have exteriors made mostly of brick, this Delta Sonic in clay would feature a greenhouse-type design with large expanses of glass to let in natural light. But with the lawsuit dragging on, the company recently took down a sign on the property announcing that it would be coming soon and replaced it with one as reads, "Future Home of Delta Sonic." In other business news from Charlie Miller, the owner of Harry Sweets Treats is retiring after 38 years. For generations of families in Eastwood and Syracuse eastern suburbs, summer meant a trip to Harry Sweet Treats for a soft serve, hard ice cream, and a conversation with the owner, Harry Leonardo. After 38 years in business, Leonardo has decided it's time to retire. Harry Sweet Treats at 1400 Burnett Ave has permanently closed after Leonardo, 81, sold the longtime ice cream stand 4 weeks ago. He said health problems earlier this year helped him realize it was finally time to step away. "If I didn't get sick, I'd still be doing it," Leonardo said last week. "The ice cream business is a great business to be in. I could do it forever if I could." Leonardo first got into the business in 1988 at Aunt Josie's on North Salina Street before eventually opening Harry's Sweet Treats. Even after the name changed over the years, many longtime customers still called him AJ for Aunt Josie's. "Everyone knew me," Leonardo said. "They'd come down the street, 'Hey, AJ, how you doing?' I lived with it. Nothing wrong with that." Over nearly four decades, Harry's Sweet Treats became a summertime tradition for thousands of families, especially when Dominic's restaurant next door brought in a full house before closing. Leonardo said he'd watch the customers grow up, then return years later with their children and grandchildren. "That was the best part of this business," he said. "Everyone was so happy, and I served them ice cream that made them happy. Those smiles are what I will never forget." After serving his last cone of Wilson Farms ice cream, Leonardo taped a thank you sign on the front door. Like every year, Leonardo closed the shop for about 6 months during the winter before reopening this year. But after another health scare, he said he seriously started considering retirement. "They thought they were losing me, but I made a comeback," he said. "Probably 4 or 5 months ago, I thought about it. I said, maybe you can do it another year. But you know what? I'm good. It's time to enjoy my life." Leonardo stressed the closure was not tied to business struggle. "It's not because of my sickness. It's because of my sickness. It's not the economy. It's just time," he said. The building has been sold to a new owner, whom Leonardo said may continue operating the space as an ice cream shop. He said he would gladly help the new owner if it was needed. "With the knowledge I got in this business, I've been around a long time and know what's going on," he said. Over the years, Leonardo said biggest changes in the business came from expanding flavors and changing tastes. At one point, soft serve dominated sales before hard ice cream and dozens of new flavors became popular. "You can buy any kind of flavor you can get your hand on. People will come and buy it." But for Leonardo, the shop was always more about the people than the product. "My customers," Leonardo said when asked what he'll miss most, "I got along with everybody." You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. In other business news from Elizabeth Duran, Charlie Miller, and Kelly Corbett, Holland Farms is planning two more stores in Onondaga County. After expanding and opening a store in the village of Manlius, Holland Farms Bakery and Deli is growing again. The Yorkville-based bakery, which has operated in the Utica area for more than 70 years, is opening stores in two more spots in Onondaga County. One is in Cicero, the second one hasn't been revealed yet. The bakery is known for its half moon cookies, jelly rolls, and other fresh baked goods. It opened a store at 343 Fayette Street in Manlius last August, and that's in addition to its Yorkville bakery. Now, bakery owner Heather Portsiba said she will open a store at 5866 Route 31 in Cicero in the former Metabolic Fitness Gym. Portsiba said she originally selected a spot up the road on 31, but it was too small. Then she got a phone call from the Metabolic Fitness landlord asking if she was interested. She said it's a great location with a lot of traffic. Portsiba said that the Cicero bakery should be open the next 2 to 3 months, and a third store will soon be announced, she said. Holland Farms offers more than 10 varieties of half moon cookies, including red velvet, pumpkin chocolate chip, and carrot. And their menu also includes jelly rolls, donuts, pies, cakes, and other baked goods. It serves coffee, especially hot and iced coffee drinks, and deli specials and soups. Trader Joe's confirms it will open a store in Camillus. It's official. Trader Joe is opening a second store in Onondaga County, according to their website. The new store will be at 3515 West Genesee Street in the Fairmount Fair Plaza in Camillus, according to the announcement. Ashley Furniture officials said in early May they were closing May 16th for the summer in order to downsize and make way for Trader Joe's to move into a portion of their store. The new grocery store is one of more than a dozen new stores announced for this year by Trader Joe's. "We've consulted our maps and compass and found a terrific location for a store in Syracuse," the announcement said. "We're proud to be joining the neighborhood and to continue our commitment to providing nourishment to the surrounding communities through our Neighborhood Shares program." No opening date for the store has been announced. This will be the second Trader Joe's in Onondaga County. The DeWitt store is off Erie Boulevard East by Barnes & Noble, and it opened in 2014. Trader Joe's started in 1967 and has grown to nearly 650 stores across the U.S. One of Syracuse's longtime barbecue spots has closed. Limp Lizard Roadside Cantina has permanently closed its North Main Street restaurant in May on the 21st, citing ongoing staffing shortages. "We've worked hard for just a long time, but we just can't do it anymore," owner Chuck Orlando said. "This was not an easy choice because we love this community." Orlando said the restaurant had exhausted every effort to keep operating while maintaining the level of service that customers expected. "The restaurant industry has faced many challenges, and unfortunately, consistent staffing shortages have made it impossible for us to operate sustainably and provide the quality experience we pride ourselves in," he and his wife Robin wrote in a Facebook post. The Roadside Cantina opened 13 years ago. It was one of three Limp Lizards in Onondaga County. The Liverpool restaurant closed earlier this year. Orlando thanked customers, employees, and supporters for years of business and memories. "Thank you for allowing us to be part of your celebrations, family dinners, date nights, and everyday moments," the social media post said. "We will truly miss serving this community." Limp Lizard will honor all existing catering bookings. Customers with questions about catering can call 315-472-7831. Gift cards will continue to be accepted at the original Limp Lizard Bar and Grill at 4628 Onondaga Boulevard, which remains open 7 days a week. Limp Lizard has been part of Syracuse's dining scene since 2004, known for barbecue, live music, and casual row house atmosphere. "I've been in this business for 38 years, Orlando said. "This is tough and it breaks my heart, but we'll keep going." Pizza Hut in Route 11 in Cicero has closed its doors. The chain restaurant, 7801 Brewerton Road, is one of the last Pizza Huts in the area. The closing was announced on social media. "Today is the end of our Cicero Pizza Hut chapter, but tomorrow we'll start each of our new chapters. And as we navigate the next chapter of life, we'll always stick together and we'll remember this amazing adventure," the post read in part. No reason for the closure was given, but Pizza Hut had announced plans to close about 250 restaurants this year. "We've made the difficult decision together with certain franchises to close a limited number of locations in the U.S., the chain said on its website. More than 6,700 restaurants remain open across the country. A Pizza Hut at 7365 Oswego Road in Glen Crossing closed earlier. Remains open. In 2018, several Pizza Huts in Onondaga County had closed. The days of buying a soda cup at McDonald's and filling it once, twice, and maybe a third time are coming to an end. If you want a refill, it's still free, but you'll have to get back in line. All across the U.S., self-serve soda machines are disappearing from McDonald's restaurants, and there's no way of knowing which restaurant will be hit next. The fast food giant is moving full steam ahead with its previously announced renovation plans that include removing all self-serve soda machines from its locations. In a statement to Fox on May 3rd, McDonald's said, as confirmed in 2023, McDonald's will be transitioning away from self-serve beverage stations in the dining rooms across the U.S. by 2032. The change is being rolled out over 10 years and is intended to create a consistent experience for customers and crew across all ordering points, whether it's McDelivery, the app, kiosk, drive-through, or in the restaurant. Customers across the U.S. are starting to notice the absence of these beloved soda fountains in their restaurants, and let's just say they're not loving it. I was recently at a McDonald's restaurant and was told that the server had to fill my soda for me, and I protested and said, the machine's over there, just give me the cup. So it's not something that people really enjoy. The newest Wingstop in Onondaga County is open in a small shopping plaza at 7985 Brewerton Road in Cicero. Manager Brandon Perkins said the restaurant is designed mainly as a to-go restaurant, but there's a few tables inside and no drive-through. This is the second Wingstop to open in a Syracuse suburb in the past several weeks. A Wingstop in Camillus at 3528 West Genesee Street opened in April. The Dallas-based chain specializes in cook-to-order classic and boneless wings, tenders, and chicken sandwiches in 12 flavors. It also serves seasoned fries with homemade ranch and blue cheese dips. The rapidly expanding chain was founded in 1994 and has more than 2,600 stores worldwide, and it added nearly 350 new locations in 2024. In sports news, Section 3 lacrosse titles are online this weekend. You can check Syracuse.com for the schedule for the games. There's too many to list for this broadcast. And in girls lacrosse, West Hill, Marcellus are set to clash in the Class D championship by Kevin Smith. The West Hill and Marcellus girls lacrosse squads have set their sights on next week's Section 3 Class D championship game. On Thursday, top-seeded Wolfpack and the third-seeded Mustangs got the job done in the semifinal round, with both winning 17-7 after knocking off fifth-seeded Casanova and second-seeded Skinny Atlas, respectively. West Hill and Marcellus will face off for the third time this season in the Class D final at 7 o'clock Tuesday at SUNY Cortland. The Wolfpack will make their third straight appearance in a sectional championship game. West Hill lost to South Jefferson twice in the previous title mashups. When I came to West Hill, my hope was turned to West Hill into a program that was going to do this a little more consistently, Wolfpack coach Bob Elmer said. It's taken a little bit of time to build this culture. I think the beginnings of this journey, our team learned how to get there, and now hopefully we're beginning to learn how to get there and play well. It's the next step we can take. The Mustangs have been knocking on the title game door for quite some time, but the team fell short in the semifinals three of the last four seasons. This is a dream come true, said first-year Mustang coach Brianna Ruggio. Everything the girls have worked toward. We came into the playoffs, and I told them to hit the ground running. And that's my goal and should be yours, too. West Hill and Marcellus will enter Tuesday's championship game, each in search of their respective program's first-ever sectional title. The Wolfpack have already beaten the Mustangs twice this season, April 17th at a 15-9 final and on May 14th at 14-10. They say in sports that the hardest thing to do is beat a team three times in 1 year, Elmer said. When we watched Marcellus play tonight against Skinny Atlas, it really was a team effort. That team has gotten a lot better as the season's gone on, so we know we're going to have our hands full. Their defense has improved, their goalie has improved, and their offense has really improved. Ferrugio is the third time, and it's the charm. This is the big one, she said. If the girls just go to work, I don't see anyone stopping us. We play with the same grit every game. We're coming for West Hill, and nothing's going to stop us. On Thursday, the Wolfpack led 12-2 at the half on Thursday, and they never looked back. Melissa Mando finished with five goals and three assists for West Hill. Sophia Lasher provided 4 goals and 4 assists, while Kaylin Murphy chipped in 15 draw controls. Grace Stroman and Madigan Burns each contributed 3 goals. Wolfpack goalie Brianne Sisak and Mackenzie Conroy combined for 5 saves. The Mustangs, meanwhile, snapped a 9-game skid against the Lakers and beat them for the first time since 2018. CeCe Powell anchored the Mustangs with 7 goals, 3 assists, 7 ground balls, and 3 forced turnovers. Piper Vanderhoff finished with 2 goals, 4 assists, 5 ground balls, and 6 controls. Good luck to the girls on Tuesday. Let's take a look at what the end of May and the beginning of June is going to be for our weather forecast. Across the area, it looks like a slight chance of showers Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, but beautiful temperatures in the high 60s, low 70s. It warms up again as we head toward next weekend, with the highs approaching 80 degrees. From around the region, temperatures have been in the 70s consistently, and then temperatures will drop again into maybe the low 60s over the week, beginning of the week, and higher 70s as we again approach next weekend. Across the United States, in Anchorage, they're hanging in the 50s. Down in Dallas, they're approaching the triple digits again, hanging in the 90s. In New Orleans, they're hanging in the 80s, and the coldest spots across the country would be in the northwest in Seattle, where they're only in the 50s, other than Anchorage, obviously. Across the world, Acapulco checks in the 80s, London in the 70s, Paris in the 90s, and Tokyo in the 80s. And again, if you get a chance to get out and see the sky this weekend, look for that full moon and the planetary satellite that's going to be popping up right next to it. It's a beautiful weekend to go stargazing. From the Empire section of the newspaper, chances are the sounds of your favorite American guitarist began in Central New York by N. Scott Trimble. When Ellsworth Ransom started a family business in Oswego County more than 85 years ago, he made wire pot scrubbers and air cleaner parts. A generation later, family members diversified into wires needed for other things like cable boxes and Cadillacs and Harley-Davidson components. Then came 1999, and the opportunity of another huge market was music to their ears, guitar strings. Today, United Wire Technologies produces superfine wires that wrap around about 80% of all guitar strings made and used in the United States. That headline is expanded further in a 2-page article by Emily Kulkus from eKulkus@syracuse.com. The next time you're listening to someone play guitar, be it a big-name artist or your favorite local musician, there's a good chance a critical part of their guitar string was made right here in Central New York. United Wire Technologies produces the super fine wires that wrap around about 80% of all guitar strings made and used in the United States. So if you lined up to see Chris Stapleton, Taylor Swift, Noah Kahan, Joe Bonamosa, and Brandi Carlile, 4 of them are probably strumming something made just north of Oneida Lake. Founded in 1938, United Wire is a fourth-generation manufacturing business in Constantia that keeps on hustling to defy the odds. After rebuilding, after a 2012 fire destroyed its equipment and building in Cleveland, Oswego County, 15 years before that, the customer had accounted for 60% of the U.S. business, decided to go overseas. But the Ransom family, father Jim, 82, his sons Don, 56, and Mike, 59, and Mike's son Nick, 25, are always working to diversify their business, integrate technology, prioritize customer service, and innovate in a space that continues to grow. You can read more of this article at syracuse.com. It's quite lengthy, 2 pages, and I don't have the space for it in this broadcast. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. With the beautiful weather starting to come into the area, let's take a look at things happening across the region in the upcoming week. On Tuesday, the Syracuse Job Fair at the On Center brings together job seekers and employers from a wide range of industries, including healthcare, education, construction, manufacturing, and technology. Job seekers can find a list of participating companies at tinyurl.com/syrjobfair. The fair is an opportunity for employers to connect with more than 1,500 people expected to attend in search of employment. To register as an employer, email paul@syracusejobfair.com. 800 South State Street in Syracuse from 10 to 2 on Tuesday. On Thursday, historian Jane E. Calvert will present John Dickinson and the Creation of American Independence as part of Lorenzo State Historic Sites America 250th Speaker Series. She will examine Dickinson's role in America's founding, arguing his leadership made the Declaration of Independence possible and shaped American independence. Complimentary charcuterie is provided in a cash bar. Where? At Myers Creek Casanova Farm Brewery, 33 Rippleton Road in Casanova, 5 o'clock on Thursday, and it is free. Syracuse's largest food festival features $2 samples from more than 80 local bars and restaurants, plus three stages that boom all day and night with live music from scores of local artists and national headliner Fuel. Fuel, the band behind Hemorrhage in My Hands and Shimmer, will take the main stage at 7:15 p.m. next Saturday in Clinton Square. Where it is in and around Clinton Square, downtown Syracuse, on Friday and Saturday. Food vendors open at 11. Live music continues through 10 p.m. and it is free to attend. The festival in Chittenango, hometown of Oz author L. Frank Baum, will celebrate the iconic story with games, rides, and entertainment and shopping next weekend. Marissa Bode, who played Nessa Rose in Wicked and Wicked for Good, will appear on Saturday. Gita Dorothy Moreno, Baum's great-granddaughter, will also appear. Details can be found at oz.stravaganza.com. All Things Oz Museum is where it's going to start at 219 West Genesee Street in Chittenango. Check their website for details. There also will be a parade on Friday night. Inspired by Alanis Morissette's Grammy Award-winning album, A Jagged Little Pill is the name of the Tony-nominated musical that follows Mary Jane Healy, a homemaker whose determination to hold her family together threatens to tear them apart instead. With lyrics by Morissette and a book by Diablo Cody, the production runs 2 weeks at the Red House Art Theater. That's 400 South Salina Street in Syracuse, 7 p.m. Friday, 2 and 8 p.m. on Friday the 7th, 7 p.m. June 11th to 12th, 2 and 8 p.m. June 13th, 2 p.m. June 14th. There'll be talk back after the 2 p.m. June 7th show and ASL interpretation at the 2 p.m. June 13th show. It is $60 for tickets for those shows. Page's Butterfly Run brings runners and walkers from across central New York to downtown Syracuse for one of the region's premier 5K races. Now in its 30th year, the family-friendly event raises funds for childhood cancer research and patient programs at Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital. Proceeds to benefit the Dr. William J. Waters Center for Children's Cancer and Blood Disorders in Syracuse. Registration for ages 4 to 99 is at tinyurl.com/pagesbutterflysyr. It happens downtown Syracuse by Clinton Square next Saturday at 9 p.m. Advance registration is $50. After Friday, it is $55. Sage Upstate will hold its 11th annual Pride 5K Walk and Run at Long Branch Park, welcoming LGBTQ+ community members and allies. All proceeds stay in Central New York to support lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, and ally communities. Register at sageupstate.org/pride-5k. Happens at Long Branch Park in Syracuse, 9 p.m. next Saturday. $35 through Friday, $40 on the day of the event, and $45 virtually will include a t-shirt, $15 for kids 12 and under. The H. Lee White Maritime Museum and New York Sea Grant will host a free family-friendly festival along Oswego's historical maritime district, featuring activities for all ages. Highlights include sailboat building and racing, maritime-themed crafts, performances by the Happy Pirates Theater Group, a child's activity honoring the National Historic Landmark World War II tugboat LT-5, and other events at 1 West First Street Pier in Oswego. noon to 4 next Saturday, and it is free to attend. Syracuse will kick off its Juneteenth celebration with a showcase at Salt City Market featuring youth African dance troupes, spoken world artist symphony, and a performance by UAD show group / Kings of the Fall. The event serves as a preview of the broader Juneteenth festivities. 484 South Salina Street, Syracuse, next Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m., and it is free. The CNY Fiber Arts Festival brings together more than 100 vendor booths offering hand-spun yarn, roving, felted goods, handmade clothing, jewelry, and pottery at the Herkimer County Fairgrounds. Workshops in spinning, rug hooking, needle felting, and weaving are available for beginners and experienced fiber artists alike, and a children's area offers hands-on crafts for younger visitors. New this year, a youth sheep show will feature clinics and workshops on Saturday and a competitive show on the 7th. Workshop registration is required in advance for most sessions at cnyfiberarts.org. 135 Cemetery Street in Frankfort at the fairgrounds from 10 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday the 7th. General admission is $5. Children under 8 are free. The Song and Dance will hold a Dreamland dance party next weekend. Performers will include DJ True Master and tarot reader disco indie pop artist Sid Silver and M. Silver of Planetarium. The event will offer a night of DJ-driven music with an intimate venue setting for those who love to dance. This is a 21 and over event. Tickets are at ticketweb.com. 115 East Jefferson Street in Syracuse, 6 p.m. on Saturday, and the tickets are $19.31. On June 7th, Manlius Taco Bell Cantina and drag host Aria V are teaming up for a drag brunch featuring performers Twigs Von Du, Realistic, and Miss Gay Empire State 2026 Natalie Taylor. Guests can enjoy Taco Bell menu favorites alongside adult beverages, including Twisted Freezes, local beers, and canned cocktails. The event is free with an RSVP at ticketweb.com. Seating, though, is first come, first served. For Stickley Drive in Manlius from 11 to 2 on June 7th, free with your RSVP. Sharkies will host a tribute concert honoring Steve Shedd, a well-known New York musician. Performing bands include The Steps, one of Shedd's first bands, and Prognoses, his last band, along with special guests Mark McCree and the Funk Junkies, Timeline, and David Porter. The concert will feature music from Genesis, Peter Gabriel, Marillion, Alan Parsons, Steve Wilson, and others. 7240 Oswego Road in Liverpool from 1 to 6 on June 7th. Presale is $5 and at the door is $10. And Ward W. O'Hara Agricultural and Country Living Museum in Auburn celebrates the month with exhibits and activities highlighting the dairy industry's role in Cayuga County. Exhibits include a look at the past State Fair butter sculptures and a dive into the world of cheesemaking. Reoccurring activities include specialty cheese samplings, trivia, ice cream tastings, and butter making demonstrations. It's at 6880 North 38A in Auburn. It runs from June 1st to the 30th. Cheese samplings are 10:30 and 3:30 on Sundays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. Ice cream Fridays from 10:30 to 3:30. Butter Mondays from 10:30 to 3:30. And the entrance fee is zilch, zero, free to get in for the month of June, for Dairy Month. From the Outdoors column, the state is planning native aquatic species in the Erie Canal by Heidi Truchel Light from the Tribune News Service. Lindsay Yoder, aquatic invasive species coordinator for the state DEC Region 9, is separating good water plants from the bad as part of a planting project based at the North Tonawanda Botanical Garden. Yoder seeks to rewild the Erie Canal this summer while fighting invasive water weeds. After collecting and growing native water plants from the Niagara River at the Botanical Gardens greenhouse, the native plants are added to the Erie Canal to reclaim shallow areas where the invasive species are removed. Yoder and her team recently planted Villaceria americana, also known as water celery or eel grass, in the North Tonawanda and Amherst sections of the canal. The next plantings are planned for Lockport. The idea would be to create more habitat for fish and improve the fishing, Yoder said. That has been a pretty common concern for people lately. We've seen and heard that fishing has improved with the change in the vegetation, and we want to support the wildlife like waterfowl as well. Starting in 2024, Yoder's work in the canal also aimed to develop a proof of concept and protocols for the state for reintroducing aquatic plants so that others may implement the practice. We are dealing with invasive hydrilla. When you go in and treat them, you're left with these open spaces, and we are determined that restoration needs to be an integral part of our invasive species control. Hydrilla, whose strands resemble bottle brushes, was allegedly first introduced into waterways after an aquarium dealer shipped it from Sri Lanka in the 50s. After deciding the shipment couldn't be sold, it dumped it into a Florida canal where the plants took hold. And as you know, people drive up the canal or a boat from Florida to New York State on a yearly basis, so they just brought them with them on their boats. Vallisneria creates long chains of plants under the water through runners, and the mechanism creates those root systems that allows them to completely out-compete hydrilla, and we're trying to use that Vallisneria as a control. She said the project also reintroduces native sago pondweed and water stargrass, which resembles fennel. The sections we're working on at one point is the natural area, she said. It's previously Tonawanda Creek before it was diverted to be the Erie Canal, and we're incorporating that and bringing some of what might have been there before. Planting areas include Amherst Canal Park at the island in Oxbow. It's unlikely boaters will come across the plantings, she said. From the Outdoors Best List column, you know it, New York's Breathtaking Natural Wonder by Samantha House. Upstate New York's most famous waterfall has been named one of the most epic natural wonders in America. Niagara Falls has earned a spot on a lofty list of 12 breathtaking natural wonders in the U.S. that you need to see in your lifetime by Travel and Leisure magazine. The roundup ranges from world-renowned destinations like Grand Canyon's National Park in Arizona to lesser-known spots like Cumberland Falls State Resort Park, a Kentucky waterfall nicknamed the Niagara of the South. The inclusion on Travel and Leisure's list marks the latest recognition for Niagara Falls, the awe-inspiring trio of waterfalls that span the U.S.-Canadian border. American Falls and Bridal Veil Falls are on the U.S. side of Niagara Falls within the Niagara Falls State Park, one of the best state parks in upstate New York. Over 8 million people visit the park every year, according to Destination Niagara USA. Niagara Falls has earned plenty of awards, from being dubbed one of the world's most beautiful waterfalls to earning recognition as the most Instagram state park in America. The park, which is free to visit, has also been named one of the 10 best free attractions in the U.S. You'll hear the power of Niagara Falls before you see it, with a thunderous roar as 3,160 tons of water spill over their towering cliffs each second, Travel and Leisure wrote. In its roundup of places that showcase America's most awe-inspiring landscapes, the magazine encouraged travelers to explore the park's hiking trails, which take visitors along the Niagara River and into the Niagara Gorge, and to book a ride on the Maid of the Mist, the boat ride that ferries passengers close to all three waterfalls. Other popular attractions at Niagara State Park include the Cave of the Winds, a thrilling experience that allows poncho-wearing daredevils to nearly reach out and touch Bridal Falls, and the Aquarium of Niagara, a home to creatures ranging from penguins to native Great Lake species. Visitors who work up an appetite after hiking and admiring Niagara Falls are also invited to dine at Top of the Falls Restaurant, a goat island eatery that has been voted amongst the top 10 waterfall restaurants in the United States. Niagara Falls State Park is located at 304 Prospect Street in Niagara Falls, and to learn more about it or the state park, the oldest state park in America, visit their website at niagarafallsstatepark.com. Also from the best list, Pavilion at Bethel Woods has been voted again America's Best. A stunning upstate New York concert venue set in a hallowed musical grounds of one of the most famous concerts of all time has once been crowned the best in America. The Pavilion at Bethel Woods Center for the Arts has been named number one amphitheater by USA Today's 10 Best. The historical Catskills venue that hosted Woodstock won top honors for the second year in a row. The award-winning open-air venue stands on the former dairy farm that housed the 1969 Woodstock Music and Art Fair. Bethel Center for the Arts is located at 200 Hurt Road in Bethel, and some of the best concerts coming to upstate New York are slated to happen there. They include Paul Simon, Toto, Brandi Carlile, the Outlaw Musical Festival, Alabama Shakes, Billy Strings, Josh Groban, and more. To learn more about the center, its museum, and what shows are playing, visit the center's website at bethelwoodscenter.org. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the Syracuse Communities column, welcome to Westcott. You can discover an eclectic, vibrant neighborhood rich in culture from Faye Shan. The Westcott neighborhood, just southeast of downtown and bordering Syracuse University, is a gem within the city. It's perfect for those looking for a place to live that prides itself on its quirkiness and progressive nature and brings together a diverse range of people, businesses, and amenities. The tree-lined neighborhood's walkability and convenient location make it ideal for homeowners and renters alike, including families, graduate students, and longtime property owners. The largely residential neighborhood was named after Amos Westcott, a dentist who also served as Syracuse mayor in the 1860s. While there was some urban flight during the 70s, those who chose to stay cultivated the neighborhood to a counterculture hub of the city, nicknaming it Westcott Nation, a nod to Woodstock Nation as coined by activist Abby Hoffman. They forged a very active and intimate community spirit here with a lot of organizations devoted to social, political, and community good, but also a lot of art and music, poetry, and coffee shops, said Westcott neighborhood resident Sam Gruber, and that spirit continues today. Westcott's communal and artistic sensibility, woven through the small but mighty business district and the events that take place here, attract people from all over the area. Murals, art installations, and creative elements fabricated by architectural design firm Echo are dotted throughout, especially on Westcott Street itself. Each June, the Westcott Art Trail showcases the neighborhood and celebrates local artists and crafters. You can take a self-guided tour to see the artists demonstrating and selling their work, live performances, and enjoy food vendors, all as a fundraiser for the Westcott Community Center. The center on Euclid Avenue ties the neighborhood together, providing social services for residents and hosting the Eastside Neighborhood Farmers Market from June to October. History buffs might enjoy the Gustav Stickley House, a three-story home of the renowned furniture maker and father of the American arts and crafts movement. The house is being meticulously restored, and plans include a house museum and guest suites. Founded by activists in the 1970s, Syracuse Cooperative Market is another keystone of the counterculture era. The community-owned grocer on Kensington Road emphasizes whole, local, and organic foods. The market functions as an accessible food source for residents and a way to support local agriculture. Come hungry when you come to Westcott. Rise and Shine Diner is the place to grab a creative brunch, and Recess Coffee's original location remains a popular choice for locally roasted coffee. Families looking for a casual, fun outing can stop by Tazza Pizza and head to Yeti Frozen Yogurt and Cafe right after. The neighborhood has a wide selection of international cuisine, including Syracuse Halal Gyro, Gangnam Style Korean Kitchen, Alto Cinco, Las Deliciosas, Kaluchi, Ra's Saffron House, New Garden, and Ashi Sushi. Members of the Essie family, longtime Westcott residents, own Moonjed's Middle Eastern and Greek Cafe, Mom's Diner, Taps Bar and Restaurant, and Salon 5515. Since 1986, Boom Babies has catered to people searching for the perfect prom gown or dress for a wedding or a social event. The shop includes a lively selection of casual clothing as well. And a few doors down, its vintage outpost, the Boom Beyond, has a curated selection of vintage clothes for men and women. Thrift shop Cluttered Closet also offers the thrill of the hunt with consigned clothes, new and vintage accessories, and home decor. Westcott, a neighborhood to visit when you got a lot of time. From the CNY History column, Syracuse's Boy Mayor, a 14-year-old that helmed the city for one day in 1926, by Jonathan Croyle. Syracuse history books say the city's mayor was Charles Hanna in 1926. He was for 364 days that year. But for one day, May 3rd, 1926, Syracuse was led by Jimmy Kelly, a smart, savvy, baseball-obsessed 14-year-old from Theodore Roosevelt Junior High School and the son of a widow on South State Street. On his one and only day in charge, Kelly arrived early for work at City Hall, driven to the office in Hanna's official car. He received callers before ordering his chief of police, George Flint, a North High School student, to strictly enforce parking regulations. "Those parking signs are up there for something else than to waste wood," said Syracuse's boy mayor. When a citizen petitioned him for a Memorial Day bullfight, Kelly was intrigued but beholden to a Sydney ordinance. He argued, "Gee, it would be great, but it's against the law, and the law must be observed. Your petition is denied, but to see just one good bullfight with all the trimmings would be great fun." What was going on? It was Boys Week, a national phenomenon conceived as an antidote against the fear of the rise of socialism following World War I. Organizers hoped it would lead to a new generation of good American citizens. In 1920, New York Governor Al Smith called it an insurance policy against Bolshevism and radicalism. It came to Syracuse in 1926, and the city's boys took it seriously. The event invited young men to participate in a grand American political experiment. Boys ran for office. They were nominated conventions, speeches, and election day, and on May 3rd, government positions were handed over them for one day. Besides mayor, boys served for one day on the Common Council, as judges, and even as a coroner and health commissioner. No one, though, wanted to be the dog catcher. The boys were boss for the day, and the grown-up officials stood back, and the youngest learned the ropes of the ship of the state, the Syracuse Herald reported. The course of affairs went along smoothly and unruffled. Let's take a look at what's being popular in the What to Watch column. The latest comedy series from Mindy Kaling looks at five work-obsessed 20-somethings living in New York. Ella Hunt, Avantika, Will Angus, Jack Martin, Nicholas DeVerney, and Jack Ellis head the cast. The news release notes that Lundgren, history's greatest machines with Dolph Lundgren, Lundgren is hosting the show because his background in chemical engineering runs Monday at 10 o'clock on the History Channel. In streaming services, Cape Fear, inspired by the 1957 novel The Executioners, as well as the two prior film adaptations in 1962 and 1991, will be streaming on Apple with 10 episodes, and it finds a happily married couple, Amy Adams and Patrick Wilson, being stalked by a man from their past, a killer who has just been released from prison, played by Javier Bardem. Martin Scorsese and Steven Spielberg, who directed and produced the 91 film, both serve as producers here. CCH Pounder, Patrick Fischler, Jamie Hector, and Ron Perlman will also appear, while directors included Morton Tindlin, Trey Edward Schultz, S.J. Clarkson, and John S. Baird, and will begin streaming on Friday on Apple TV. On home video and on demand, Sentimental Value, a Norwegian comic drama for writer-director Joachim Trier, concerns a veteran film director who abandons his family. Renate Reisev and Elle Fanning will co-star. Nirvana the Band, the Show, the Movie is an adaptation of the Canadian television series from comics Matt Johnson and Jay McCarroll about two musicians desperate to land their first gig. Dreams, an American philanthropist and Mexican ballet dancer engaged in a torrid affair across borders, starring Jessica Chastain and Isaac Hernandez. Over Your Dead Body, it's a remake of the 2021 Norwegian film The Trip, about a couple on the rocks, Samantha Weaving and Jason Segel, who go on an isolated vacation cabin, each with a plan to kill the other, that is, until circumstances force them back together against a bigger problem. Lonely Island member Jorma Taccone directs. And Fuse is an unexploded bomb for World War II found at a construction site in present-day London, which provides cover for a daring criminal operation and a crime thriller starring Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Theo James, Gunga Mappa-Raw, and Sam Worthington. So some stuff to look at as you look through the summer viewing. And lastly, let's take a look at what's popular in books on this weekend edition. A couple found mental health advocacy programs that use nationwide a mission to demonstrate that past trauma does not have to define a future. Chip St. Clair relived the darkest moment of his past, an alcoholic mother and a brutal father whom Chip later discovered was amongst America's most wanted for murdering a child and later escaping from an Indiana prison and living on the lam for decades. St. Clair's discovery came at age 22 when his dad dislocated his shoulder and was jailed for domestic violence. My mom was probably on her 14th cup of beer, lasagna was burned, and my dad was in a foul mood, Chip said of that night. We had a mild disagreement about some news story. He called an aunt to say he was pressing charges against his father, and that's what he learned his father's real name and the fact that his mother had helped him escape prison. He also learned his dad has never done 3 tours in Vietnam, from which Chip had attributed his violence to PTSD. His dad had never been a soldier at all, just a murderer on the run, which explained constant middle-of-the-night moves. My family played along with that story the whole time, he said. With encouragement from his wife, Lisa, St. Clair leaned into the trauma by writing The Butterfly Garden, a best-selling memoir of hope and strength in the beginning of a national nonprofit that they founded, the St. Clair Butterfly Foundation, or scbf.org. The goal was to provide people with practical tools to move beyond trauma. The foundation now serves as a blueprint for child advocacy and aimed at providing youth in underprivileged communities with mentorship programs based on the creative arts. Their mission is to dispel the notion that children or anyone with traumatic backgrounds are destined to continue the cycle of suffering. Past adversity does not have to define a person's future. That foundation, now a program called Beyond Trauma Informed, serves schools, law enforcement, workforce environments, hospitals, and communities across the nation in a system-wide approach to help these organizations that are under pressure from the rise in mental health issues. It complements mental health services currently available, but also goes deeper with a neuroscience approach, including social, emotional learning, and expressive arts, and it has proven highly successful. In one example involving 540 students in a K-12 school district, grades, graduation rates improved, and educators saw a 90% reduction in violent incidences and an 80% drop in disciplinary actions. For me, my home was a safe place, said Lisa, who has known Chip since high school. I told him everyone needs a safe place, and maybe he could find a safe place in writing. The national program teaches that dozens of organizations can adopt this into their regular practices. It's critical anyone in crisis feels seen, heard, and validated. The freeze, fight, or flight reaction dissipates, and they're more likely to hear you in return. So something to look for on your local bookshelves or on where you get any book sources. Add some other books to your must-read list over the summer. The Calamity Club by Catherine Stockett. Stockett has made a reader's wait 19 years for her follow-up to the blockbuster The Help, but what she lacks in speed, she made up for in heft. The Calamity Club is 656 pages long. Like The Help, it's set in Mississippi in the 20th century, and like The Help, it's about female strangers who bond despite their differences. This time, they include a young resident of an orphanage who, during the Great Depression, becomes friends and forms a club with two women on the margins of society. Another similarity with The Help, a first-person narrator with a vivid, wisecracking voice. I arrived here at the orphanage 2 birthdays ago. Most folks just called it the orphan, or else the old orphan, though I've yet to find where this new orphan is, and believe me, I've asked. 5 Weeks in the Country by Francine Prose. Hans Christian Andersen really did visit Charles Dickinson at his British country estate in 1857, and the bickering Dickens family really did grow to hate him over the course of what turned out to be a lengthy stay. Some details are known about his visit. Hans Christian Andersen slept in this room for 5 weeks, which seemed to the family like ages, wrote a note Dickens pinned on the wall. But Prose, whose novels include Blue Angel and Lovers of the Chameleon Club, Paris, 1932, imagines what else happened between Andersen and the Dickens clan. Pro tip for host, Don't bite and guess when your marriage is falling apart. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the weekend edition of the Post Standard. Your reader has been Donna, and also we welcome any kind of feedback, what you would like to hear, what you would like us to improve on. And thank you for listening.